There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on a Friday. Live local talk over the last next couple hours. Glad to have you along. And Jeff Poor Show goes up in podcast form here shortly, just like Mobile Mornings, and our 52 hours a week of live local programming. You can check it out kind of a la carte by going to fmtalk1065.com. Or better yet, love you to subscribe at iTunes or Stitcher or Spotify, TuneIn Radio. Name the podcast platform. Pretty darn good chance that we're on there. So, check it out, and we'll talk more with you about that coming up in just a little bit. I do want to, second time on the show here, and I'm glad to get her back on from the Alabama Cattlemen's Association. It was something that yesterday I think I was talking about. Governor Ivey allotted $26 million to help stabilize farmers and cattle producers. And so let's talk about this. From the beef side and the Alabama Cattlemen's Association, Aaron Beasley is joining us now to talk more about it. Thanks for your time. Thanks for coming back on.
Yeah, Sean, good to be back on with you and hope you're doing well.
Yeah, I'm doing good. And, you know, when we talked before, and we'll circle back around to this, but last time we were talking, people were couldn't find, you know, cuts of beef that they wanted in the store. There was, you know, there were empty spots in the grocery store for beef. At the same time, you and I were talking about, you know, those of us that raise cattle were saying, hey, you know, the prices are depressed at the market. So, you know, we're not getting the money for them. So we'll circle around to that in just a second. But help us understand what happened with the governor's allotment of this money and what it means to agriculture in the state and specifically what it means to cattlemen.
Certainly. We were very, very excited to hear the announcement from the governor this week. Honestly, that's been in the works for several weeks, working with Commissioner Rick Pate at the Department of Agriculture and also the governor's office. We had put in requests along with other industry stakeholders to try to obtain some of these dollars for cattle producers. And any producers out there that got involved in the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program, known as CFAP, that was administered federally through USDA Farm Service Agency offices. And that program worked around an arbitrary date range of if you sold cattle from January 15th to April 15th, you got one payment. But if you, by chance, sold cattle after April 15th, which a lot of our producers did, particularly our larger stocker operators, the payment dropped down to $33 a head. At the same time, they suffered a significant loss on those cattle because they really were caught up in the cog of this coronavirus pandemic when the market was crashing. And so we saw that as a real hole in that program. And once it was rolled out and we recognized that and we found out that the state was going to get $1.8 billion out of this CARES Act, it really just became pertinent that we try to get some of these funds and try to help some of these producers that really got left out of CFAP at the end of the day. And again, that goes back to a lot of our stocker operators. They have yearling cattle that were coming off of pastures that they had been grazing, row crop land that they had been grazing, and that's really a big piece of our cattle industry in the April and May months. And so the rollout of the governor's program this week, what it's going to do is do a direct payment for producers of sold cattle from April 16th to May 15th. and the payment will be based on the weight of cattle that you sold. And so we have three different categories ranging from calves to feeder cattle to fed cattle. And so that was just really a huge announcement. I think it's going to be a great thing for our producers, giving them the ability. It's not going to make anybody whole by any means. That's not what we're trying to do. But it will give them the ability to obtain some funds, pay down loans that they owe on these cattle that they had this year, and hopefully stay in business for next year after what has been just a terrible few months in the April and May and June months. And just very happy and thankful for the governor to support agriculture, support the cattle industry. And so, and another piece of that was outside of the $10.5 million for the direct payments, we also found out that funding was given to a request for $1.5 million to be used for existing small meat processors in the state. And so that was another piece of this. We had a lot of processors that are backed up. They were backed up before coronavirus. They're really backed up now. And so we hope that the grant process will be an opportunity for them to look at ways to expand what they're currently doing and provide more direct-to-consumer sales for our beef producers.
And I want to get into that because there's a lot of questions there, but I want to go back to what you had said previously. For the folks that fall under this second window, the April to May window here, like for me, so I sold a few head during that. How do I present this? Do I present receipts from sale, or what do I do to apply for this?
So everything is still being put together as to when the rollout will be. We predict it will be somewhere around mid-September. That's what we're working towards right now with the Department of Agriculture and Finance Department. But it will be an online application process, and there will be documentation that needs to be supplied to show proof of sale on those cattle.
Okay.
But stay tuned for more details on that. We'll certainly be getting that in the coming weeks.
Okay. And then on to this processor thing. You're talking about the $1.5 million. Last time we talked, Aaron, we kind of described the situation that was driving down the prices of cattle for the ranchers out here, for people, cattlemen out here, but then people were in the stores saying the beef prices are through the roof, and we're trying to figure out where that disconnect was. And you talked about kind of the choke point here, these big processors in the country, right? These few, not a whole bunch of them.
Certainly.
So what's the situation there versus this money here for how many small processors? You know, is this a dying breed? Are there still operations here in Alabama?
There are. So in the state, we have about 30 inspected small processors, and that would be federally inspected, state inspected, or custom exempt type facilities where they are harvesting cattle and can provide beef either direct to consumer through retail sales or direct to consumer by that consumer purchasing that animal on the hoof, then having it processed. And so there has been a decrease in the number of facilities over the last decade or so, but I think that there is a lot of opportunity for those folks that are still operating to expand what they're doing, because the business is there for them, the cattle is there for them to be processed. And, you know, one thing that's come out of coronavirus is that consumers now recognize that it may not be exactly what you want at that grocery store every time you want it. We're certainly past what we were up against 3 and 4 months ago, but there is an appetite out there to purchase beef from the farmer, from the producer, and we want to make sure that the ability for that producer to do that is there. And right now, with the producer, the processors being backed up like they are, one thing that we can try to do is give them the opportunity to get some of these grants and expand what they're already doing to hopefully process more cattle.
I got to think that that's going to be well received, Aaron. I mean, you look at what happens on the other parts of the ag, right, where people want local food sources, and they're going, whether it's farmers markets or fruit and vegetable stands or whatever, and they really want to know where their food's coming from. It's I want some Alabama grown this. It seems like that at some level, it's not going to take over the whole thing, but at some level that gives some opportunity for folks here in Alabama, for producers and for processors.
We certainly have producers they were doing this long ago. They're still doing it. They're thinking about getting into it now. We have recently set up a Bama Beef directory on our website where a consumer can go on and see producers that are getting cattle processed and can provide beef direct to consumer. So that's been developed recently, and I think it's probably got somewhere close to 40 to 50 producers on it. It's new, so it will continue to grow. And I do think that this will be well received. And yes, it's a niche market, certainly. We're not going to try to take over the conventional meat market in any way, but it provides more outlets for our producers, creates more opportunity, and at the end of the day, the association's here to assist with things such as that.
All right, we're coming right back for the news break. More with Aaron Beasley from the Alabama Cattlemen's Association. And if you've got specific questions, too, on what you see in the grocery store beef-wise, we're going to talk about that as well when we return right here on Midday Mobile.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:21 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Continue our conversation with Executive Vice President at the Alabama Cattlemen's Association, Aaron Beasley. And okay, so let's kind of get into the retail side of this as well, and then we can circle back around on what the governor has done. The situation last time we talked, I had people that were saying, listen, I'm having trouble in grocery stores finding the cuts of beef that I want. Has that changed? Has that been alleviated?
It has. We are in a much better place today than we were 4 months ago. One of the game changers for us as an industry was when President Trump came out with the executive order to implement the Defense Protection Act. I believe that's what it's called. Forgive me if that's not quite right, but the Defense Act that went into all of the meat processing plants and provided them with everything that they possibly need in order to continue operating. And so as long as workers were showing up and they were healthy and safe to go in, then they were able to operate. And once that happened, we saw a very quick change in the amount of beef that we were able to process on a weekly basis. And so steadily, every week, we would see that number of head processed just continue to climb. And once that happened, we saw more beef at the grocery store, and all of a sudden the supply chain disruption that we were experiencing through March and April, we saw that alleviated. And really the only problem we're dealing with now is that we do still have a backlog of cattle that are ready to be harvested and haven't been able to yet because of the lull in time where we had disruptions. And so from the live cattle side, we are still working through some issues. For the consumer out there, when you go to the grocery store, not only will you find exactly what you want, but you'll also find it back at a price point that you're very much used to paying before COVID-19 ever came around.
Okay, so the supply is there, and the price is coming in line.
Yes, sir, absolutely. At the same time, I'm very happy to see, as we're getting into some of our feeder calf sales here on the live side, is that the live cattle prices are really getting back to where they needed to be. We're not seeing the volatility that we were seeing earlier in the pandemic, and seeing some strong pricing and a little bit of a rally here, which is great news.
And it is. And if y'all didn't listen at the beginning of our conversation, we're talking about Governor Ivey's allotment of $26 million to help stabilize farmers and cattle producers coming from the CARES Act money. Did you watch that process? I'm interested in it, as you know, we've talked about the $1.8 billion, but everybody early on said, well, spend it on this and you know, balance the general fund. I said, wait. The Fed said it has to be used for coronavirus response. So the process of making that case to the feds, did you watch that in the process, how they got to it?
We were actively engaged in that process, quite honestly, Sean. A big piece of what the association does is lobbying. And, as guidance was put out by U.S. Treasury and everybody started to get their arms around what the money could or could not be used for, it became clear that there may be a small opportunity to get some of this money for the cattle industry. And so I had this saying, you know, I was kind of joking around at the meeting, and I said, well, all we can do is ask, and the worst thing they can say is no. And I actually use that in my life from time to time. And in this case, I'll be danged if it didn't work out in our favor. And we did ask, and we had great response. And now we get to have something that is really going to help so many of our producers in the state, so many of our members, and just folks that, through no fault of their own, got caught up in this thing. And, you know, I think it's going to have great long-term effects on our industry, saving many of our cattle farms.
Let's talk about as we go forward in this, and with that $1.5 million for the processors, this help to stabilize the farmers. Are we going in a new direction in this? You know, because we talked about the local scene here, and once again, neither of us think you're going to change the big beef and that process out there. But does that open up? Because all we hear, you know, is fewer farms. Consolidation of farms, fewer farm families, you know, they're getting out of the business. I just wonder if this is maybe not another chance to take for folks that might in the past have been whatever else, they've gone to been an accountant, gone to, you know, do a radio show, whatever, that may get back into agriculture.
Well, before we got to the pandemic, it felt to me just personally like we're at a bit of a crossroads in our industry. And it kind of felt like there might be some shifting and some movement just within some of the niche markets and maybe some expansion and ways to do things just a little differently than what we usually do. And now that we've had the pandemic, I think I feel even more strongly about that. And if you look across not just Alabama, but across different regions of the country, people are just automatically more in tune now with food. I mean, they were before, but for the first time in our lifetimes, we went to the grocery store and didn't have everything that we wanted right there in front of us.
Right.
And it didn't matter if you're talking about meat products or cereal or fruit or vegetables or whatever it was. There is a major supply chain disruption. And I think it kind of woke a lot of people up, and they got them thinking, hey, I need to understand this a little better. And, you know, maybe I do want to try a little harder to support a local producer that's producing beef locally, or if I want to go to a local farmer's market. I'm not saying everybody wants to do that. I'll be the first one to tell you I go to the grocery store and buy all my groceries. And then, I buy beef from time to time at different places. But I do think that there's a growing population that does want that experience. And probably more so now than we had before the pandemic.
Yeah, I mean, Aaron, there is, if we took a drone and flew backyards in Alabama right now, folks that had not gardened in the past. So we have a show every Sunday here, fantastic gardening show, hosted by a friend of mine. The increase in the podcast downloads and the listening on the show and the questions from new places that he's gotten over the last 6 months has been something. It's been incredible. As people took to, gardening, producing food on the vegetable side in their backyard. It's not as easy for urban or suburban folks to, you know, run a cattle, you know, in the backyard, not happening. But yes, I think there's got to be this desire to reach out and find somebody close to home who is a producer, who you know where your beef is coming from. I think that's got to be part of the same thing for the gardening sales to do what they would. I got to imagine there's some part of this that plays out in the meat side.
Well, and another piece of that, speaking to the podcast and watching all that, we've seen a huge uptick in the trends of watching videos for home preparation of beef products, you know, Google searches for ground beef recipes. And we're able to get all of that through our relationship with the National Beef Checkoff Program. We can get some of those metrics, and it's been phenomenal to see that. And that all resorts back to families staying at home, staking down in place, and they're forced to work with our product more at home. And I think there's been a wealth of education out there as to how to work with our product. And that's great for our industry, because all it does is expose our consumers to the versatile ways that they can utilize beef in the kitchen. And when they start getting back out to the restaurants, of course it'll be there for them as well.
Very good. As always, I appreciate your time. People want to find out more about Alabama Cattlemen's Association. How do they find you?
Yeah, they can visit our website, bmabeef.org, or follow our Facebook page, Alabama Cattlemen's Association. And to get information as we get the rollout of this ag stabilization program, those two sources will be the best to find that information as well.
Fantastic. Executive Vice President, Alabama Cattlemen's Association, Aaron Beasley. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Sean.
All right. Thank you. We're coming right back. John Sharp from AL.com joins us. A headline out here about politics and football. You got your politics in my football. No, you got your football in my politics. I'll have him explain more when we come back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Reminds me, I don't mind jumping around on me. 12:35 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile song Buffalo Stance. And Dalton, did you see it? Yet another person getting trampled and flung around by a bison. Some people call them buffalo bison. It's like a summertime ritual here, right? That we have people go out west. They're in fear of every bear, but they seem to have zero fear of a, you know, 1,000-pound bison. They get close to them. This one has a, it was from, I think the story came from like news station in Rapid City. Woman got flung around. I guess the bison was flinging her around until her pants came off. And then the bison left with her pants and she was left there on the side of the road with no pants. But get to that story coming up maybe in the second half of the next hour, because right now my buddy from John Sharp AL.com is joining us. Hey man.
Hey Sean, how you doing?
I'm good. Was there a temptation when the story was posted to say, hey, you got your politics in my football? No, you got your football in my politics. Which one's first? Which one comes first here? Because the headline, politics of college football season, seeps into Alabama Senate race. Which one's first on this? Is it about football or about the Senate race?
Well, you know, politics and college football has been in the news all week. So, obviously, you want to see what's going on here in Alabama, where we have a head football coach running for the Senate. And this has been... this has been a topic of a much discussion. I would say, especially here in the South, it's been discussed more, if not more, than when it comes to politics, than the vice president selection. I mean, this is such an important issue in Alabama when you talk about the fate of the college football season.
This is reminiscent, and people could read your story at AL.com, but it is reminiscent how whether to mask or not mask, or the discussion of masks has been political. There's some signal, you know, or there had been, you know, if you wear a mask or didn't wear a mask, what that meant. There seems to be the same thing happening on college football, whether they're going to play or not play. It seems to be breaking down, at least if you look online, on political lines.
Yeah, you make a good observation on that. And I want you got to start wondering at what point, or if we're even beyond that point of even measuring it, how exhausted the public is with all these political discussions. But that's kind of where we're falling in line with. It's a cultural issue, not necessarily an issue that, you know, say Tommy Tuberville gets elected to the Senate or Doug Jones gets reelected, that they're going to automatically start having to deal with college football issues. I mean, that's you know, not really where we're going here. But it is a cultural issue that politicians are weighing in on. And it is dividing along party lines, and more or less in regional politics as well, because you're seeing a lot of, especially from the Democratic side, Democratic politicians on the East Coast and the West Coast are coming out more on the lines of, you know, we need to hold up the college football season until the spring. There needs to be more science and study involved. We need to be more cautious on the public health measures before we have college football, whereas you're hearing kind of a different statement made by politicians more in the center of the country.
Let's talk about here in Alabama. So, Coach Tuberville, Tommy Tuberville is saying what? Play the game?
Yeah, he's coming out pretty emphatic on that, and it started basically on Monday with a video they posted on social media, on Twitter, I believe, which he called, college football is the lifeblood of the South, and that we need to play football. We need to get back to normalcy with football. And he followed up with sports talk radio interviews this week, one occurring here in the Mobile area, and as well on the Fox News network. So he's been out there pushing for the restart of the college football season. One of the interviews, he came out actually very strong. He suggested that Nebraska head football coach Scott Frost, who was one of the coaches in the Big Ten, is really upset over the fact that the Big Ten decided not to have college football in the fall this year. And he's come out and suggested maybe Nebraska ought to play at least temporarily for this season in a different conference. And there's been some back and forth with the Big Ten over that. And Coach Tuberville came out and said that, Nebraska should be allowed to move into another conference if they wanted to. So I found that to be an interesting comment. He's been pretty strong on this issue.
Yeah, and what about that? I mean, just we can talk about it as a journalist and then as a, pretty strong college football fan that you are. If your conference is not playing, should you or shouldn't you be allowed to go and play ball with another conference? It would seem weird to have them like Nebraska playing with the SEC or something like that. But what about to those players, those coaches? If the school says yes, what do you think?
Well, I have, I'm a big University of Iowa fan, and I think they were one of the two schools. Them and Nebraska were the two schools that the presidents wanted to move forward with playing the season this year. Nebraska's hierarchy's come out a little bit more stronger than Iowa's as far as wanting to play temporarily in another conference for one season, or at least for the fall. And, as far as I know, the Big Ten has said at this point, no, you can't do that. Where Tommy Tuberville's, his statement was, that's communism to dictate to a school that they can't play for this season. And, that's not for me to judge. I really don't know, how that's all going to play out. As far as I know right now, there's a lot of public banter going on in regards to that. I think we need to see where this heads with the other three conferences, the SEC, the ACC, especially, down here. We need to see exactly where this goes as far as, what kind of other changes we might see with the season. I believe the SEC commissioners come out and said that, they're not expecting to go it alone this year, that the other conferences cancel or postpone. They would have to really take a good look at that as well. So this is still a fluid story. We're August 14th. The college football season seems like it's right around the corner, even though it's been delayed to the end of September. As we've seen since March, coronavirus, this story is ever changing, and it changes all the time.
Oh, you and I, you and Dalton even more than I, would be analyzing week one game or week zero. It's always going to be great. Week zero games down to the nuggets there. I'd sit and listen to y'all. Usually that's what y'all be doing this time of year.
Yeah. Like a lot of things, we miss a lot of that stuff. You're having fantasy football drafts right now. I mean, I'm assuming the NFL is going to go forward and play, but interesting. I do fantasy baseball, and I'm in a league right now. And some of my friends who are very well schooled in doing this kind of thing, they're very frustrated. They're ready to pull the plug on the season on our end. And I'm like, let's just see how this plays out. But you got teams that are canceling, players that are going on injured lists from the virus, and it offers up a whole new strategy that is quite frustrating when you do these kind of when you get involved in the fantasy sports side of things, which a lot of people like to do.
For sure. Now, further down your story, so we talked about what Tommy Tuberville was saying about getting the teams to play. What is Senator Doug Jones saying? Is he different? I mean, this is Alabama. Is he saying play ball or not play ball? What's he saying?
Well, he's not saying not play ball. He's actually saying it right now. He's siding on the he is siding on playing ball. But he's also saying that we need to follow the science. We need to follow the health experts. We need to keep the safety of the players, coaches, students, and fans as a top priority. And there has to be some sort of social distancing under consideration out at Bryant Denny or Jordan Hare. Now, we don't know what that exactly is going to look like right now. I would be really surprised if we're going to have 100,000 fans attending an Alabama football game next month. But we don't know for sure exactly what the policies will be. And I think that's where Senator Jones is coming from. And, you know, we need to talk to these folks and make sure that everybody is safe when they come to the games. He's also said that he's been in contact with and that he's been encouraged by the presence of health experts at both Alabama and Auburn. And so he's come out a little bit more lengthy statement that, you know, it's not as, I guess you can argue that it's not as strong as Tommy Tuberville's, but it is certainly at this point backing the start of the college football season. He said his quote during a radio interview the other day was not a bad move, given everything that he knows that the schools are doing at this point.
Yeah, you also, in the quotes and all the people you talked to in this story, you're talking about, that Cal Jillison is saying that, well, he said that it was unusual to have the start of the college football season emerge as a dominant issue in competitive Senate race. Well, I would have said at that point, well, of course it is, because, like, this is our first pandemic, right, Professor? I mean, we're not used to this. I mean, but football and the discussion of football, that's political red meat in the South or the Midwest.
And you're right. But at this point, I think there's been very few races that are going on right now in which this has risen to the level of a Senate candidate like Tommy Tuberville coming out and doing the national media circuit. I mean, he was on Fox News being interviewed about this. He's been on local sports radio.
Well, he's from Central Casting. I mean, he's running for Senate. He's a former, you know, SEC, another football coach. I mean,
exactly. Exactly. So that makes this, I mean, it kind of rises into the, it certainly becomes an Alabama Senate issue. You know, where do the senators stand on this? And, you know, for Tommy Tuberville, it's the timing, it's the optics of this particular issue, the timing of the fate of the college football season. It could be any better for a politician like Tommy Tuberville to jump on because
agreed.
He's a former head football coach.
It reminds folks, it's a horrible situation, but I don't know another politician in the nation or somebody running for office in the nation that is better suited to benefit from that. I mean, every time we talk about college football and people are thinking about how they're going to vote in November, I mean, they're reminded of Tuberville.
Right. How many college football coaches have run for such a high office like this? Tom Osborne comes to mind, but aside from that, I really don't know. We've had athletes run before. We had, you know, Bob James as governor in Alabama, but, you know, from a head football coaching perspective, Tommy Tuberville is kind of in rare waters. And the timing of this issue, the college football season, and it's in headline news. I mean, like I said earlier, I mean, I think this has been discussed as much in this area of the state as, if not more, than the vice presidential selection. So you're talking about a hot button issue at a time when all cultural issues rise right now to become kind of a part of the political discussion.
There he is, John Sharp, AL.com. Of course, you can go to AL.com and find his stories, but also they can hop on over and talk with you on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm at JohnSharp99.
All right, and maybe we'll just start talking about matchups, predicted matchups for September. Let you and Dalton bounce that around some Friday morning. How about that?
Well, yeah, and I do, you know, I understand the safety issues that are at hand right now. But I am I've always been an Iowa Hawkeye fan, and I'm going to miss it. I'm going to miss it this year. I mean, I think that's where we're at. I mean, things could always change. I hate to say anything definitive right now about where we're at right now with COVID-19. It seems always to be changing.
Welcome to 2020. I don't have anything definitive on where I parked my car, John, I don't, let alone where we're going in the future of our country. Thank you, as always, brother. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. Coming right back, Boar of Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right. 12:51. Let's do this. Let's run to the president, taking some questions from reporters because the ridiculousness of what's going on right now. I think you just need to hear it. And then coming up next hour, too, we'll talk about mail-in voting. I get an interview that talks about the dangers and pitfalls of mail-in voting. A whole bunch more on the way. But let's go to the president right now.
Look at Oregon. Look what's going on in Oregon. I don't think they have a clue. We could stop that. If they would request it, we would stop that problem in 1 hour, like we did in Minneapolis. We would stop it in 1 hour. It would be over. It's so easy to do. All right, please, go ahead. In the back, please.
Alicia Powell at the Gateway Pilot. Yesterday, you announced a historic peace deal between Israel and the United Arab Emirates. And later in the day, Joe Biden tried to take credit for it.
I heard that. That was a beauty. Yeah.
What's your response?
We announced a deal, and I appreciate it. Even the New York Times gave it great coverage and editorials today. Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, everybody was saying great. And this is something we've been working very hard on. And I saw where Sleepy Joe tried to claim credit for it. And I'm trying to figure out how that one works. No, what he did is they made a terrible deal with Iran. And the deal was a horror show. And I ended it. They gave him $150 billion for nothing. They gave him $1.8 billion in cash for nothing. They got nothing from that deal except trouble. They did nothing. They're just like they've been weak on China. They've been weak on Russia. They've been weak on everyone, and they were the weakest of all on Iran. No, that was a great deal made by very talented people that work with me, and it's been praised all over the world. And what you'll see now is other countries will come into that deal, and you'll have peace in the Middle East. And Biden doesn't even know, he doesn't even know the name of the countries I'm talking about. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you.
All right, so the president addressing a couple of the questions there, but started off the hour. Let's see if we, okay, I'm trying to get this audio here on. This was from earlier when the president was speaking as he is talking about the direct payments here. So can we go to that cut? This is President Trump from just a little bit ago.
More money for the U.S. Postal Service and mail-in balloting. Yeah. If the Democrats were to give you some of what you want, which you articulated in a series of tweets in the last hour, would you be willing to accept the $25 billion for the Postal Service, including the $3.5 billion to
handle mail-in voting? Sure, if they give us what we want.
And it's not what I want, it's what the American people want. So in addition to, and I think, John, as part of your answer, I can read this. But in addition to the executive orders that we signed, which are going to be doing terrific things in terms of payroll tax cut, which is a lot of money coming to a lot of people very quickly, I've directed the Secretary of the Treasury to get ready and send direct payments, $3,400 for a family of four to all Americans. Democrats are holding this up. I am ready to have the UST and SBA send additional PPP payments to small businesses that are.
Okay, so, but the 3,400, somebody had said earlier, it's a new number. Now, 3,400 is basically what it was, but exactly what it was before, right? 1,200 per, let's do my math here on the fly. So that's 2,400, 500, or 500 per child. Yeah, 3,400 is the same. Is the same amount that the last checks went out. So the president's talking about doing that again. Of course, yes, this is all held up. It is held up by the difference here between the Republican plan coming out of the Senate, the HEALS Act, which itself is a trillion. We've got, you know, it used to be there was this mark where we went where a billion didn't seem like a bunch before, right? You know, we went to that point, and now we're just throwing around trillions. So the Republican plan, the value plan from the Republicans is $1 trillion. The Democrat plan, the HEROES Act coming out of the House, is $3 trillion. So, right, so everybody's spending a good bit of money, both sides, but it's how much. So they're not getting close to negotiating on this. Here, I tell you what, let's play. This is a clip that I played a couple times this morning during Mobile Mornings, if y'all didn't hear it. So this is from a Westwood One story, but it has some audio here from Nancy Pelosi. There we go. So this is from Speaker Pelosi here at the end. And maybe you can help me understand what she's saying, but this is some analogy of how far apart they are on this.
Agreed to something that had down the offer and then asked if Pelosi would come back to the bargaining table. She said no.
Unless they see the reality of what it means in the lives of the American people, what good is it for us to agree to something that has no relationship to meeting the needs of the American people?
So for the time being, the impasse stands. Until such time, says Pelosi, as the White House agrees to take the bold steps necessary to confront the coronavirus head on.
The virus has picked up steam, and they, and like a freight train, is coming down the tracks. And they, like a convoy, going as slow as the slowest ship, are going so slowly that they'll never overtake the virus. We cannot let that stand.
Okay, so there's a clip from Speaker Pelosi. So now remember the analogy a couple weeks ago was a giraffe and a flamingo, and she pointed out that you couldn't mate them. You couldn't have giraffagos or flamingraffs or something like so. But now she's saying that the Democrats are on they're a train, right? This high speed, I don't know, some kind of train that's going fast. And the Republicans are ships. And then there's like a slow ship or a weak chain or something. Once again, point out, as I do, and I'll do this on both sides of the aisle. These are the people running the show. These are the people making the big decisions, or not making them in the case. So President Trump is pointing out that you could have the checks very quickly if the Democrats would come in line. Now, that's politics. That's straight up politics. At the same time, Democrats holding this up and not letting you get the checks, that's straight up politics as well. And we'll continue the discussion of said when we come back.